From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we go to Philadelphia to speak with Professor Tony Montero, and we're going to have a chat this week about the last past year, the first year of the Biden administration. Tony, welcome.
How you doing, Don?
Very well. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Good. I'm glad to be here.
So, looking back a year, pretty rosy picture painted by Jen Psaki, of course, over what's happened over the last year. It's one achievement after another. Low unemployment, getting a handle on inflation, a whole bunch of other stuff. Let's have a realistic look from where you're sitting in Philly.
Well, yeah, and Jen Psaki and the Biden administration want to talk about the economy. And I think we need to talk about the economy and what is really going on with the economy. But I think the larger picture is that this is a administration in a political crisis. And all the polls show this. The most optimistic or best polls for the Biden administration are showing him in the low 40s in approval ratings and in the mid to high 50s in the disapproval rating. And one poll went as low as 33%, which kind of says that so much depends on who you poll and how you poll. But at any rate, these are among the lowest numbers for the first year of an administration. I think in some ways they are as low and in some cases lower than the first year of the Trump administration. And Trump did not have the support of the mass media and the ruling elite, as it were.
Au contraire, so, right? I mean, he was under carpet bombing from before he even took office.
Yeah. He was. I mean, he was labeled as a neo-fascist, and we had to do whatever by any means necessary to get him out of office.
Yeah.
And respected elites from think tanks were even calling for his assassination.
Yeah.
He was viewed as such a threat to the ruling elite and the existing political order. Right. But Biden, with all of the support of the ruling elite, of the mass media, is showing numbers, polling numbers, that are somewhere around and in some cases lower than Trump's were in his first year. Now, the question is why this is going on. And I think in large measure, this has to do with three things. One, the economy and inflation, which means that people don't believe what the Biden administration is saying, because their life experiences don't reflect what the official numbers about the economy are saying.
Right.
In other words, there is relatively high unemployment, but let's not forget, 11 million people walked away from their jobs last year, in spite of the fact that presumably wages went up. But then the, ball breaker is inflation. And we can get back to that. But people don't feel good about the economy, no matter what the Biden administration says. The other thing is the persistence of COVID-19. And the fact that in the United States, more people have died from COVID-19 than any nation in the world, including the two largest ones, India and China.
Right.
More people have died in this country. And more people died in 2021 the first year of the Biden administration, then died in 2020, the last year of the Trump administration.
And what's interesting about that, and this is one of their problems also, they made a campaign issue out of it. They're the ones
they
that's,
made,
this was
that's
a measure.
Right. That's absolutely. Right.
And so there's just one other thing before you go on. Is one, yes. of the, one of the distinctions between Trump's numbers and Biden's numbers in the first year is that Trump's numbers were very, very low when he took office because of the barrage of media and all the other claptrap that was going on. And his went up ever so slightly, but they actually went up. Biden's were high when he came in. And they have dropped precipitously. So the dynamic is different also.
Oh, yes. And I think we should come back to that. I'd just like to mention the third thing is the foreign policy of the Biden administration.
You mean World War III? Do you think that bothers some people?
Well, I would call it brinksmanship on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to talk Big Willie stuff to Iran or Libya. It's a whole nother thing to talk that same stuff to Russia and China,
right?
Both of which are nuclear powers, that is, have nuclear weapons, and are in a strategic alliance against the United States, bullying and brinksmanship.
Right.
So I think when you put those three together, there might be one or two others. Maybe we could add to that the dysfunctionality of the Democratic Party itself, especially the elected Democrats, and especially the elected Democrats in the House of Representatives. So I guess I would put four things. And everybody knows that this crisis is deep. It will last for the remainder of the Biden administration. You feel almost as though you're at the end of an administration.
I know.
You know, not the beginning, not the first year.
Yeah.
And this says a lot about the nation, the fact that COVID cannot be gotten under control in spite of high numbers of vaccinated people or people who have immunity because they've already been infected. People are still dying at unbelievable rates, and there's no end in sight. Thankfully, the Supreme Court overturned Biden's mandates that in private businesses, people have to get vaccinated, and so on and so forth. In other words, I would say this, Don. We are looking at a rebellion on a mass level against the existing ruling elites. People are looking for a way out. The unhappiness is unbelievable. And, you know, even the polls show that 70% of the people polled say the nation is going in the wrong direction. So I'll just end there. That's what I would say.
Yeah. You got a couple of things in the middle of that that are sort of part of the theme that we've been, you know, visiting over the past 5 years now, I think, which has to do with the crisis of legitimacy at the bottom of it. I think you really couldn't symbolize it any more clearly. Mr. Clementi, my creative writing teacher in high school, would have marked, you know, lacks subtlety on this if I used it as a symbol. Nancy Pelosi, who is 81 years old, you know, competing with the Crypt Keeper for his job, in essence, as a public relations projection, clearly addled, and you know, about to lose control of the speaker's seat, you know, it looks like in the midterms, which is not unusual, but clearly is not really fit to serve yet another term, is running anyway, announced it yesterday, and it's obvious that the reason that she's doing it is so that she can select who takes her place 2 minutes after she's sworn in January of 2023. For people who are looking at questioning the legitimacy of the political system here. You know, that's almost poster child material. And then, you know, the soil this takes place in after the 2020 election, about whether it's 49 or 51% of the people who voted that in one fashion or another, whether through the Electoral College or direct voting, that voted for Trump, that supported Trump, that challenged the legitimacy of the election. That's one block that don't think the elections are fair or clean. And then out of the others, there is a nested strong minority, at the very least, who have seen what happened to Sanders twice in a row, that supported him, that also don't believe that the elections are legitimate. And so that's kind of the base of the electorate, not even counting the half of the people that don't vote because they don't think it's legitimate.
Well, but see, the Democrats, in pushing their more open voting rights legislation, which means that all controls over who votes and how you vote and what is a legitimate vote, what they're claiming, in fact, and this is ironic, that elections are not fair. So the same thing that the Trump people are saying, that the elections are not fair, is what the Democrats in their John Lewis voting rights bill are saying. Right. Elections are not fair, or we want to make elections fairer. Right. And, you know, there's so many ironies in all of this, which, in fact, the people get and are turned off by it. For example, it's easier to vote in Georgia than it is in New York State.
Right.
It's easier to vote.
Yep.
It's probably easier to vote in Texas than in Pennsylvania.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that puts the lie to the whole claim of what we're looking at as Jim Crow 2.0.
Right.
Which is what, you know, Biden's speech in Georgia, I think on January 15th around King's birthday, was all about. He looked like a madman and a fool, which looks like in general, by the way.
Yeah. Listen, we're talking instead, I think, because the bulk of these provisions.
Yes.
I'll say the bulk of the output of these provisions is going to be, you know, a huge increase in paper, you know, mail ballots, remote balloting. That's which is right. A prescription for ballot box stuffing. We're talking Boss Tweed 2.0. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, so to call it Jim Crow 2.0, I think is inaccurate. I think we're talking more. Well, put it this way. The Republicans probably, because we have two separate, you know, groups of thieves that are, you know, angling for your TV set. One, you know, to carry it off and, you know, sell it at the pawn shop. One of them has Jim Crow 2.0 in mind, voter suppression and such based on race, because they lose in this particular constituency. And the other loses overall, so they want to stuff the ballot box, and so they've got Boss Tweed 2.0. I think that's kind of what we're looking at as they haggle over these bills.
Yeah, and the population, the voting population, couldn't care less.
Well, they don't even understand it. Nobody took civics, and you know, it's almost incomprehensible. Look, one thing that got me before you go there, that Biden was, you know, genuflecting at the altar of Dr. King, like, as if no one remembers that Dr. King said, and so did Malcolm, and so did anyone else paying attention, the right to vote is meaningless if you have no one to vote for. And the process of selecting candidates is not democratic by any means in either party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, but, you know, everything points to a not only a crisis of the Biden administration, but a crisis personally for Biden himself. People see him as really not being in charge of anything or incapable of being in charge of anything. And, you know, Don, you know, you and I have talked about this jokingly, and you have to keep a sense of humor about all of this. Yeah. You know, long live Richard Pryor, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
But, you know, we talked about von Hindenburg.
Yeah.
who chose Hitler to be the Chancellor of Germany in 1933.
Yes.
And what we also said is that von Hindenburg was only a symbolic president. He wasn't. He was dead on his feet.
Right.
That's and right. You and I have jokingly said that Biden makes von Hindenburg look like Michael Jackson.
Yes, that's right. That's,
you know,
that's yours. I mean, that's yours, actually. But yes, it cracked me up the first time you said it. It was true. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, Biden is, and everybody, you know, kind of concludes that he's out of it. He can, you know, hold his own for 15 minutes as he did in the 2-hour press conference.
Right.
But you never know what's going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, I know.
And he shows signs of being unable to control his anger, his emotions. He, you know, he's liable to call you an SOB at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, he did it the day before yesterday. Yeah.
Well, he did it the day before yesterday.
Yeah, on an open mic. And you know, they say it was, you know, like some kind of mic capture. He was on camera at a press conference. He wasn't being subtle. It was, you know, it was clear. And by the way, you know, what gets me, I remember PEN America and the Committee to Protect Journalists and all of that. You know, the first time Trump, you know, said something that upset, you know, he was mean to me. Reporters.
Yeah.
The PEN America sued him.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
they brought
that.
A lawsuit. Yeah. Like, this is in the first year, like in the first months of Trump's administration. If he called somebody a stupid SOB, like Biden called this reporter from Fox the other day, they'd have crucified him.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on top of it, Biden has these two nuts running foreign policy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Biden and one of those nuts, Jake Sullivan,
oh boy,
are actually on the tape between Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for European Affairs under the Obama administration, and Jeffrey Pyatt, who was the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine under Obama administration, as they on the telephone, a captured telephone call, which is still in its entirety on YouTube, discussed and planned and decided who was going to rule Ukraine instead of the elected president that was then in office, who was removed in a coup within 3 days of their conversation, placing exactly those people in there. These two worked it out and then said, all right, well, we're going to call Jake, meaning Jake Sullivan, and he can fill Biden in, and then we'll go for it.
Wow.
They arranged a coup d'etat. That's the government that paid Biden's son the no-show salary for sitting on the board of a energy company that was taken over basically from a government agency that owned coal and other energy resources.
Yeah. Well, just to extend on what you're saying, you mentioned the name Victoria Nuland.
Yeah.
Who is infamous, an infamous coup plotter.
Yep.
You know, she was the bag woman bringing the money to the coup d'etat people, the conspirators, the Nazis. You know, they wanted to overturn the Ukrainian government in 2014, no matter how it came about.
Yep.
Now, Victoria Nuland, you know, by all indications, is a pathological hater of everything Russian and particularly of everything Putin.
Yep.
She will go to World War III just to bring Putin down.
Yep.
This woman doesn't need to be anywhere near foreign policy. And as you know, she's, again, in the State Department in this administration.
Yep.
And she is mad as hell that she is not the point person. In other words, that they put this other guy, Antony Blinken, out there, who is as incompetent up against Lavrov and the Russian foreign policy establishment as your 10-year-old would be in a heavyweight title fight against Mike Tyson.
I know. That's pretty sorry.
I don't know how to be subtle about it either.
Well, you know, and Jake's, just to interject, Jake Sullivan, by the way, is now the National Security Advisor.
Yeah, the National Security. He's a nut. And then, you know, remember, in the beginning of the Biden administration, they met in Anchorage, Alaska, with top officials in the Chinese foreign policy. And, you know, these are old hands. These are experienced diplomats. And Antony Blinken went up in there going to, you know, step to them and bully them and, as they say in the streets, attempt to gangster them. And he got gangstered. I mean, these guys are crazy.
Yes,
now, we should also say that the whole Ukraine thing has turned out to be a debacle for the Biden administration. And what it looks like now is Putin has won a temporary, a partial victory. Let me put it that way. The West has said, well, we're not going to bring Ukraine and I guess also Georgia into NATO. And Putin has made it clear we have security concerns and you can't put nuclear weapons on, as he said, on our porch.
Right.
And we not say anything. And let me just say, what they're concerned about, and I think Putin mentioned this, is that if they put weapons, they already got them too close to Russia.
Right.
But with hypersonic weapons, they could hit the Kremlin and Moscow and other places within 5 minutes.
Right.
Which means they could decapitate the Russian state.
Which means quick. That if Russia sees even a blip on radar, they have to run downstairs and push the button quick.
Right, with the quickness. Yeah, yeah. The other thing is that it showed that without the United States, there is no NATO. Those 29 other countries don't want to fight a flea.
Yep.
You know, it's all ceremonial to them, and it gives them, you know, their bureaucracies capacity to hire a lot of parasites who do nothing but wear uniforms
right.
and march around. But the Russian military, of course, is a whole different thing.
Right.
But the other thing is, I think the day before yesterday, the Chinese Air Force flew the largest number of sorties, flights, near to Taiwan that they've ever done.
Yeah.
And people are saying this is sending a message to the United States. Don't do anything stupid during the Winter Olympics.
Right.
But I'm just very happy about the pushback that we see, especially from Russia and China, and that this has thrown the Biden administration's foreign policy, geostrategic operations into a deep crisis. We ask, can Biden survive? Can Antony Blinken survive? Can this Jake Sullivan survive? There must be unbelievable fights within the White House and within the State Department over these matters.
You know, you've got Jake Sullivan, John Kirby, the spokesperson now for the Pentagon, I think that's where he is, which revolving door.
Are you talking about Admiral?
Yeah, Admiral Kirby. Yeah. Wrong way, Peach Fuzz. He inherited the title from McCain when McCain went off to shovel coal where he is now.
Okay.
And, but this whole group of, I don't even know if you'd call them neocons. You know, I mean, Crystal and Kagan and those crazies, you know, they have been so thoroughly repudiated in front of just about every sentient life form on the planet. Mm-hmm. Nothing that they said would happen has happened. Nothing that they said was happening turns out to have been true. And millions of people have died as a consequence, and they still go on television and pontificate as if none of that had happened. And unfortunately for them, not every person on the planet is a moron. And not only that, as you started at the beginning of our conversation today to point out, you know, it's one thing to sit in front of a television and have the television show you pictures of steak and potatoes and tell you you're not hungry. There's a point in time when your stomach insists differently, and as you postpone that moment of reckoning, it becomes more and more intensive until the inevitable happens and you recognize you are, in fact, hungry and do something about it. And we're kind of, we're having like sort of a, you know, come to church moment on this across the board. We are closer to a nuclear war right now than we've been since October of 1962. And I don't have this, any kind of, no one that has any of the inside information in October of 1962 thinks that things were fine and everything was under control. It was good luck that we didn't blow up the world for a number of things. Fidel Castro will tell you that also. So will Robert McNamara. We now have Joe Biden where John Kennedy was.
And what do you say? You knew John Kennedy. Joe Biden, you know John Kennedy.
John Kennedy was reputed, at least according to, you know, all of the mythology and some of the tapes, to have been discussing with his inner circle the Guns of August, the book that was written, it was published actually a couple of months earlier, about the causes of World War One. Including, in his mind, as he discussed it, the fact that they were almost on an automatic walk into it because everyone thought they knew what the other side was going to do, and their information was outdated. And so, as these people here think they can move cruise missiles into Kiev and Russia won't do anything, they're going to find they miscalculated. Kennedy had people telling him, go ahead, you can blow out the anti-aircraft batteries around the missiles in Cuba, and the Soviets will do nothing. And he was like, they miscalculated World War One. If we miscalculate here, we blow them up, they move on Berlin, we invade Cuba, they fire their missiles, we fire ours. Now what?
Yeah.
We don't have anybody doing that now. Well, we're out of time. I'm sorry I took up the last couple minutes.
Okay. Thank you. It's been interesting.
It's sure as hell not going to be Joe Biden that's going to be arguing for sanity unless it's on his teleprompter, and that implies there's somebody somewhere that's going to type it in. I don't know where they're sitting, but we need them if they're out there. Okay. Tony, thanks a lot. Well, I'll speak with you again next week.
Okay, man.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.